Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Wednesday, and it's 5 o'clock, and if it's Wednesday and it's 5 o'clock, and you have tuned into the Heritage Radio Network, then you get to listen to me, Phil Colicchio, bringing you the business of the business. That's the show on the Heritage Radio Network that explores the business side of the hospitality industry, and we talk about restaurants, we talk about hotels, we talk about floating boats, we talk about airplanes, we talk about the service side of the industry. We care a little bit more about how much the parsley costs than where it goes on the plate. If you miss our broadcast live, and sometimes people miss it, I know that there are events in the world going on that may be slightly more important than listening to the show live. But if you do, please go on to www.heritageradionetwork.org. Click on to the business icon, and you can listen to any one of the 30, 40, 50 or so shows that we have in our archive. You can also hear us as a podcast on iTunes. So let's get down to business. I've been wanting to bring a guest like the one I have today on for quite some time because this guest and his profession is integral to the success of most restaurants and all bars. There's a lot of nomenclature that gets thrown around in 2014. I mean, you hear the word mixologist, you hear the word bartender, you hear the words beverage director, sommelier, wine director, barman. But what you have when you have someone who can bring all of those things into one position is you have Ted Kilpatrick. And Ted is with me today, courtesy of Tim and Nancy Cushman of the Oya Group, who have decided to come to New York from Boston to help out the Park South Hotel, which straddles 27th and 28th Streets in New York between 5th and Park. Park and Lex. And they decided to open up their venture there with an extraordinary rooftop bar experience. That experience is brought to you by Ted Kilpatrick. Ted, thanks for coming today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is it's a fascinating part of the industry. And if we speak about the industry for a moment in terms of restaurants, you know, it is often the bar program that is the difference between profitability in a restaurant scenario and doom in that scenario. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, it's interesting to me, and I know that it's interesting to the people who listen to the show, as to how a guy like you, we'll talk about you, how old are you?
I'm 29 years old.
You developed a very significant expertise, both in as a talent and as a skill and as a craft, but you're using all of that now in a business capacity as opposed to being the fellow who's going to be behind that bar on any given night and prepare and serve me a cocktail. How did you get into it? How did it begin? Where did it begin?
It began in my hometown, which is Milford, Connecticut, in southern Connecticut. Restaurants are kind of the only job I ever had. I started as a busser and a barback, and then became a server and a bartender. And when I came up to Boston, Massachusetts, to go to school, I started going back summers and opening the patio bar at that one first restaurant that I ever worked at. And eventually I decided I didn't want to come home anymore. I got a job in Boston.
And you got a job when you first started to say, I don't want to come home, or I've decided I'm going to stay and test this industry out. I mean, did you have any idea at that time what it would become 8-9 years later?
Certainly not. No, it's, I mean, even still in many markets and for many people, being a bartender is really just still a means to an end. It was just hours that worked around going to school.
Right.
Did I have any inkling as to what going to school would yield me? Absolutely not. That's why I majored in English.
I was going to ask, yeah, you went to school, you majored in...
I majored in English for the majority of my time and made a pretty violent shift to business management towards the end just because I realized I didn't want to talk about Chaucer anymore. And I basically, when the class was over, didn't want to speak of him ever again.
Yeah.
And didn't really know what
yet
I wanted to do.
You still made your way to the Mead Hall.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And the whole time, quietly, I had been really enjoying what I did at night, you know, meeting people, learning about food, learning about wine. And one thing in this industry leads to another. If you do a good enough job somewhere, someone's going to notice. And I eventually got a job at a place called Radius Restaurant.
Tell me about the idea, again, and we're going to go through this for the audience. But, I mean, I know two James Beard Foundation award-winning chefs, restaurateurs that you have worked with. You've worked with some levels of excellence when you lived in Boston that really are, you know, quite amazing to have worked with Barbara Lynch and her, the Grupo, mm-hmm. right? And with Tim and Nancy Cushman with the Oya restaurant and the Oya group here in New York. It's pretty extraordinary. How does one, you know, go from deciding, I'm going to be a bartender, I'm going to do it in Boston, you know, to working with, frankly, a couple of icons in the industry?
Well, I think it takes seeing somebody do that successfully as a career, as a choice that they've made, the hospitality industry, mm-hmm. To realize that it's even a viable option. I didn't know that there were people, professional people, who made this a career and did it successfully and to great accolades until, truthfully, I took the job at Radius. That was kind of a formative career choice for me to go work at Radius. It was time to start studying. And
right.
In my time at Radius, I was definitely studying their menu more than I was studying for my classes the next day, which I hesitate to say in front of my mother.
Well, I think she can go over it now. You're doing okay.
Starting to. But it was working there and seeing the devotion that people put into food and a wine program and a cocktail program, where I realized that, well, I like this. Why am I, maybe I should focus on this, and maybe right. I should start putting my head in books about this, which I did.
Did you have a mentor at that time? I mean, was there someone that really affected you that said, you know, that sort of showed you that I hesitate to use the word passion, it's overused now, but to show you that depth of commitment, right, that says this is not just nerdy, this is my business, this is my career?
Well, I might say that just being brought into that culture, that culture of people who were professionals at what they
right.
did, and the expectation was that you knew everything about everything. But the culture was really created by the kind of front of house leadership of S.D. Parsons at that time. Mm-hmm. Radius is a restaurant that was owned by Chef Michael Schlau, who happened to be another James Beard winner.
Right.
Yep. But definitely just the environment that S.D. created there was a really special one, where I guess I would say that anywhere I've ever worked, always try to create that culture of kind of accountability of knowing things.
Was it good fortune that you got that job, or did you seek it out saying, this is where I want to learn this trade?
I sought it out for sure. Yeah. I mean, I was working at a place on Newbury Street called Stephanie's on Newbury, which is a great, very busy place. I always say you have to learn to be fast somewhere in this
right.
industry. And that was definitely what I did there. But I wanted more. I wanted to be able to, every time somebody sat in front of me at a bar, to be confident that I could deliver the experience that they were looking for. Mm-hmm. And I think that might kind of answer your question as to why, once you have a James Beard Award-winning chef that's standing behind you producing that food, you don't want to not have that anymore.
Yeah, I notice a kind of, we don't say this enough, but I notice that James Beard Award-winning chefs rarely have lousy service in their restaurants, you know. So it's clearly not just about the taste of the food that is on the plate. It is about the experience of dining in restaurants which they supervise. The experience of being, you know, a barman. We talked a little bit before the show, and you were pretty, you impressed me with your study of the history of barmen, and their sort of their status in society, at least in America. Talk a little bit about that history and the idea now that, as you say, bartending sometimes is viewed, at least up here, right in the, you know, in the Northeast, but in lots of parts of the United States, as a stepping stone or as a placeholder for something else, mm-hmm. and not as a career. But there was a time in this country when being a barman was a noble calling, right?
Yeah,
in the community. Talk about it.
It was a very necessary part of any community, the saloon, the American bar, as it was called, because it wasn't just a place you celebrated and went out after work and had a drink at. It was a meeting place for the community. It was where papers were signed. It was where buildings were discussed and planned. It was very necessary. That's actually a term, the American bar, which probably the most famous one is the American bar at the Savoy Hotel in London. But that concept is borrowed from early American life, where it's just a meeting place. It's a place all day long where hospitality is offered, where food, eat, drink is offered. And it's a place where business is conducted, and it just exists because it has to. And it was the proprietor of that place that was the bartender, who was as respected a member of the community as a lawyer, an accountant. And then came horrible prohibition, which sent all of our famous bartenders overseas to Cuba, London, places where they could continue their craft.
Prohibition is still one of the I think in 2014, it's still an underappreciated, historically significant economic event in the United States. It changed the hospitality industry completely.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly for the worse. It took a long time to get back. But talk about that. I mean, the idea that those people with those skill sets, they couldn't ply their trade anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legally.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. The barman of a saloon in a community in 1900 wasn't celebrating the fact that he knew how to make a good cocktail, and he wasn't coming up with all these fancy cocktails. He made them as a trade, the right. same as a chef knows how to make a stock. It just was something that they did. It wasn't supernatural. It wasn't crazy that they did it. And
craftsmen.
Craftsmen, exactly. Craftsmen. That's what it is.
Not artistry, craftsmen.
Absolutely. Right. It's much closer to baking than it is cooking. It's not seasoned to taste. This is the recipe, follow it. But when Prohibition came and it sent everybody away, there was nobody to teach the young bartenders how to do it right once they were allowed to do it again. I mean, it was a long time. It was 13 years. It was a long enough period where the trade, the craft altogether was forgotten.
Yeah, I think all we know of it is what we see on Boardwalk Empire and things like that, that we just presume everybody's in tuxedos drinking brown liquor or champagne during Prohibition somewhere, and that's really not the way it was at all. It was people were dying because they were getting poisoning themselves with bad liquor. They were, everything was going on that could have been precluded. We'll get down that road. I'll get off my high horse about the Prohibition in a moment. I want to remind everybody that I've got Ted Kilpatrick here. Ted is the Ted. We didn't even talk about it. What do you want to be called at the Park South? What are you?
Well,
your title is what?
I would wish to be called a bartender, but that would mean that I would be tending bar on the nightly, which at the moment I'm not. I hope to carve out some time where I'm able to
Look forward to that day.
A little bit. Yeah, I do too. But at the moment, what I do there, I'm the beverage director, which just means that I make sure that when my bartenders reach for a bottle, it's there.
That's it.
And anybody new is trained at
it. We're going to come back after after a little break and talk about the beverage director position. We're going to talk about the training, the economics, all of that. I'm going to come back with Ted Kilpatrick, who had the brass ones to move here from Boston. And set up shop at the roof at the Park South. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. We support Heritage Radio Network because all you folks listening are so genuine, so dedicated to serious food, so much a part of what this country needs to strive to become. People like you are few and far between, and it's obvious to us at Fairway that we've got to stick together. Our desire is that the word gets out about Heritage Radio Network in its support for serious food, foodstuffs that offer memorability and timelessness, authenticity, and rarefied quality. This country grew too fast to have established any degree of a heritage. Europe had centuries to develop one. America has not. Heritage Radio Network serves to hasten the evolution of a society that often appears coarse and uninterested. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
It's always so nice to have the Punch Brothers bring me back with their version of Movement and Location off of the Who's Feeling Young album. I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you ever get the chance to see the Punch Brothers play, they'll change your life. Go see them. And those fellas in that band are real cocktail mavens. So the next time that they're back home in New York, Ted, I think we have to set them up on the rooftop.
Would love to host them.
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, let's talk about that beverage director position, because look, I had a little insight into the opening of the rooftop at the Park South. By the way, you enter the rooftop at Park South from 27th Street. I believe the address is 123.
125.
125.
East 27th.
East 27th Street. If you're listening, please go visit the bar. Please go visit Ted. Please visit that rooftop. It's an unusually excellent rooftop experience that I think every New Yorker should really check out. So even beyond the unobstructed views east, it's beautiful, and the cocktail program is really extraordinary. And it's not overwhelming, which my personal taste. It's not overwhelming, which is to me the great fun part.
Wonderful.
But beverage director. All right. Did you trade in your stripes to do that job? Are you now management? Are you the man, or are you the spiritual director of the spirits programs at the restaurant and ultimately at the hotel?
Well, I think I wish that I had requested the spiritual director position, because that's what I might be more apt to do.
Father Kilpatrick, we'll get back to that one.
Indeed. I suppose it's just I've never really been someone very interested in titles. That's one of the reasons that I really enjoy working for Tim and Nancy, because they're not about what they're calling each other, what they're calling themselves. They'll do any job that needs to be done.
Right.
The same as everybody that they hire should be prepared to do. But I suppose that what I'm in charge of there is the beverage financials, its delivery,
yeah,
the training of the people who deliver it, and the management of the inventory, putting together the menus.
Well, let's talk about that. I imagine, again, in the restaurant side of things, the food side of things, you know, the most dynamic of the cost control has to deal with labor. You know, it's almost a given.
Mm-hmm.
Same on your side?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your labor, are you training your labor? Are you engaging trained labor? Are you then sort of infusing them with the culture of Oya, the culture of Ted Kilpatrick? How's it working?
Well, certainly I always place hiring as sort of paramount when building a culture. It all has to start with your first interaction with anybody you're bringing on board.
Yep.
In order to maintain a culture where, number one, the guest is first, always, period, the end. And just to have everybody speaking the same language. So certainly we're hiring for experience for the people who are actually making the drinks, but we're always looking for people who would fit into our culture, because you can train anybody to make drinks. You can train a monkey to make drinks.
No, you can't. Train a monkey.
I've done it, Phil.
Wow. All right. all right. Let's bring that monkey in. All right. Ted, I want to hear it, because that dovetails into this issue that I have as a hospitality lawyer, right? I'm looking every day at financials. Every day I'm looking at pro formas. Every day I'm looking at cost, at ratios of sales of food to beverage. I'm seeing it all the time. You have these expertly trained bartenders. Does expertly trained equal speed in terms of their ability to turn around an order?
It can.
In a cocktail world, because we've got this situation that you are managing, and these are, and I hate the triteness of words sometimes, but I have to use the word crafted cocktail.
Mm.
All right. Even though what I really want to say is that it is a well blended, well balanced cocktail that is going to rely in equal amounts on the non-alcoholic components as on the alcoholic components. In terms of its in getting it to where it needs to be. But those things, they take time. And time is the enemy at restaurants and at bars, isn't it?
Sir, I wouldn't say it's the enemy. You just need to know. I guess I would answer that in a couple different ways. It really depends on the program. How fast do you want to be? Do you want the value of taking time, you know, expertly pouring and measuring and making and ornately placing a garnish on top? Do you want that perception of value for the guest in front of you to get them excited to drink that drink so that when it gets there, they're much happier with it? It tastes better because they saw all the care that's put into it. If that person isn't seeing that, then...
Cocktail foreplay.
If you will, yeah.
All right.
But if that person doesn't see that, if the person who orders the drink is 30 feet away at a table, yes, it needs to be fast.
And you have both of those experiences at your rooftop.
Certainly.
Is that you have a terrific, terrific long... How many seats at the bar?
18
seats. So probably you're being generous to the people who populate the bar, because you could certainly jam a few more in there if you wanted to. It's certainly long enough.
My friend's an elbow room.
There you go. Right. Exactly. But there's a lot of seating upstairs and in tables and couches and, mm-hmm. and the like. Do those people get served quicker? I mean, the people who are how's that working?
Everybody should be served at. In the same rate. If anything, I think that the priority should be placed on drinks that aren't made in front of the people that order it. So anybody sitting at a table, those tickets, all of that should take priority. There's some... Watching a good bartender work well, there's definitely some show to it, and that's something that's going to entertain you while you wait for your drink to be made,
right.
While you wait for it to even start being made. But the people who are at a table, certainly they have the company that they're with. They were lucky enough that they have a beautiful view to take in. But time ticks a little bit quicker for them. If they arrive and they don't have a drink and they don't see that it's being made or that there's drinks being made in front of them, it's a challenge. It's one that I've always...
It's an outstanding perception on your part. And is that something that you focus your training on? That you are you saying, I need the timing to be X for an order from a table
mm-hmm.
to get from you to the table? I don't want it to... Do you press that? Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's only so much that pressing can do when we put perhaps even more pressure on our bartenders to make it right every time and to do everything the way we want them to do it. They can only move so fast. It's not like they, you know, are just free pouring into a shaker and making five drinks at the same time instead of mm-hmm. four drinks at the same time. They're making one drink at a time in a shaker. They're stirring one drink at a time in a shaker so that we know that the drink that goes out is perfect. So it sort of comes, what are the things, what are the steps that we're willing to sacrifice? What are the things that we're willing to shave off? This drink perhaps can be batched, can be made in slightly larger format, minus citrus or any other volatiles. This one cannot. Is that drink going to be ordered a lot? If it is, then it needs to be quicker, or it needs to come off the menu, quite honestly. The menu is another friend when it comes to speed. What are you inclining? That's something I've always felt about bars, is that the menu is an ambassador to the people who aren't sitting in front of a bartender. If the menu is inclining, order this drink because it's at the top of the list, then it should come quickly.
Well, that's been wine science for years, right? Is where to put wines on the list in terms of price point and what people will order. Almost universally, if they are not already previously inclined to order a certain type of wine or that they're more price focused. Mm-hmm. My presumption is that you're not seeing the price focus component at a place like yours. There, the slight differentials in pricing on the drinks, but not much, right?
Not a ton. No.
Certainly,
there's minor differentiation. The one thing that we wanted to do when opening the roof was to price things fairly, to price them not just cocktails or $22 across the board like I've seen at some, but to cost them what they cost us to make.
Right.
And I think that maybe not everybody that comes in there notices that, but people who are certainly within the industry will notice that this drink is $22 because it has Talisker 10-year single malt scotch and Zwack also in it, and there's things that cost money in that drink.
Right.
But does it come together harmoniously? Yes. But it's not a drink, perhaps, and that price tag is almost too inclined that somebody who usually drinks vodka sodas maybe will ask a question about it first and say, is this going to be something that I like? Well, what do you usually drink? Vodka sodas? Probably not. Let's talk about another drink that you might like. So the price tag is almost, in some cases, an inclination of let's discuss this drink before it's ordered.
And I think that's terrific. I've actually noticed that I've been up to the rooftop enough times now that I've noticed that even the service staff can dialogue with you about the cocktails and about sort of where they might take you.
Mm-hmm.
So I give you some additional credit on that. The challenge we're close to wrapping up for today, and I know you've been kind enough to come back next week and talk to me a little bit more, because I want to know about the challenges and the opportunities of what goes on in a rooftop. But you took this job. Ted, what in the name of heaven prompted you to leave a great situation in Boston, you know, in a town that is clearly a place that you came to love, and come to New York to do this in a sort of a boutique hotel scenario? Why that career choice at this point?
Well, I certainly, Number 9 Park, where I worked after Radius Restaurant, was a bar and a restaurant that I had a crush on forever. And the people that worked there were some of the people who started this whole movement many, many moons before me. A guy named John Gertson, who was certainly somewhat of a mentor to me, worked there, and I got to take over for him, which is something you don't usually get to say about people who you really, really respect in that regard. In Boston, that restaurant was my favorite in the city. And I tried to go there once a year. I went there for my birthday frequently. And I started a conversation blindly with Tim and Nancy years ago and just said, I love what you do so much. If ever there is an opportunity to somehow link what I do with what you do, cocktails with Oh Yeah and that experience, please let me know.
And that's a very unusual, unusual is the wrong word. It is not a first blush marriage. Is it?
No.
Right? Because of what Oh Yeah... Tell the audience what Oh Yeah really is about from a food standpoint.
Oh Yeah is some of the most incredible flavor combinations when it comes to raw fish and otherwise that I, for one, have ever had. And I know that I'm not in the minority saying that. It's a very unassuming, small, what they bill as just a sushi bar is so, so much more than that. And it's an omakase chef's tasting experience that literally every bite I think is going to be the best thing I have that night, and then the next bite trumps it and forget about the last thing.
It's quite an experience, and I'm selfishly excited for it to open here in New York one day. I hope.
Perhaps. who knows? Nothing's impossible.
One day. Well, we're going to wrap up today's session with Ted Kilpatrick, the beverage director at the Rooftop at the Park South Hotel, 125 East 27th Street. There's often a line to get in because Ted likes to make sure that the guests experience a well thought out bar program, that he doesn't create a scenario where people are going to go up and wait too long, become disappointed. Rather, really provide them with a hand-tooled experience, a bespoke experience. I'll use all of those stupid words that I keep reading about in the industry, trying to describe what it is that you do. But really what you do is just really create fantastic, memorable experiences for your guests every night. Ted, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And when we come back next week, we're going to get into the rooftop challenges. I'm excited to do it. Thanks for coming out today, man.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.